All right, cool. Let's pretend like this just started.
Hello.
All right, cool. Is this 60 Minutes?
60 Minutes.
60 Minutes. All right, cool. Hi, I'm Scott Hanselman, and this is my boss, Scott Hunter. And we're going to provide a little bit of context and maybe a tentative schedule.
Yes, I think we can talk about schedule.
We've got some interesting stuff going on his laptop. He's got a daily build of RC2 here, so we'll talk about that. What we wanted to do with this talk is give you the context that I think is needed around .NET and ASP.NET and what's going on. A lot of people have some confusion about what does it mean for the future of .NET. We want to give you a little bit of a sense of what exactly the heck it is we're doing over there. And what is our goal?
We should also say that we used to be the ASP.NET guys.
That's true.
And now we are the .NET guys all up.
Well, explain that. So the organization, there was a reorg. It was kind of a Game of Thrones .NET kind of a thing.
So in 2010, Scott Goose moved to the Azure team. And when he moved to the Azure team, he took a bunch of teams with him. Anybody that did anything web, Scott like hitched up to him and pulled him off. And we were a team that went off and left the developer division, which means we left the .NET team. And went and worked in the Azure division for a couple of years. Late January of this year, we actually put the ASP.NET team and the .NET team back together again. And so we're actually one whole .NET team again. So now Scott and I are the .NET Scots.
So who is in charge of that? Who is in charge of .NET and ASP.NET?
That would be me.
So another Scott.
Yes.
And I work for you and you work for him.
Yes.
And that's totally fair, and it was done entirely on merit.
And if anybody in the room is anybody in the room, the name is Scott. I will need a successor at some point.
Are you looking looking to hire?
Because you cannot take the role without the name of Scott. So
men or women named Scott are more than welcome to apply. All right. So we've got a lot of different things going on with .NET, and we also want to point out that Xamarin appears inside there. Here, you can look
there.
No,
I was just looking. That is so terrible, but it looks good over here.
Well, here. I know that you're old, but you can see this monitor here. I've made the fonts really big for you.
What are you talking about?
I think we're the same age.
I think we are.
Xamarin is part of .NET as well, right? So Mono is part of the .NET family, and that's a really important thing to point out. So .NET is trying to be everywhere. I've always joked about from 64K to 64 gigs, but that's the point.
It's now coming true.
It is actually coming true. We want it to work on devices, we want it to work in the cloud, and we want it to be such that if you know how to write VB or C# or F#, then you are now a device programmer, you are a cloud programmer, you can write Raspberry Pi code, whatever makes you happy.
Speaking of that, is everybody in the room aware that Xamarin's now free?
You heard about that? All right, good.
Okay, just want to make sure that everybody knows that the reason we said Xamarin is we acquired Xamarin. In fact, Miguel DaCosta just went through NEO, that's new employee orientation at Microsoft, last week.
That is hard to see.
And they are now part of the team. That's fine, that'd be the right set of slides.
No, it's hard to see.
No, we made a colored version that was not as contrasty as that. You have the old deck.
I don't think so. I'm blaming the projector.
Okay. To the point on Xamarin, so we have .NET Framework, we have .NET Core, which is something we've been working on for the last couple months, or year, or a couple years, too long, and we have Xamarin. So we have these three .NETs, and that's one of the big challenges that I have is going forward is how do we reconcile these .NETs? And these .NETs are slightly different. Obviously, everybody in the rooms are familiar with .NET Framework, which is part of Windows. It's a Windows component. It's the only way you get it. .NET Core and Xamarin are both different because they're actually deployed as part of the application. But really, moving forward, what we want to do is we want to take these things and find a way to convert these into one .NET. I mean, I don't know about you, Scott, but we've had Compact Framework and Silverlight and Windows 8 and UWP and .NET Framework and .NET Core. We have a lot of this stuff, and we made a lot of .NETs, and it's kind of a confusing mess.
And let's dig into that for a second. Like, you've always been able to sit down with C# or VB and write all of these things. Like, you could think to yourself, I'm a C# programmer, and then you can go and write all of these things. But we would call them .NET, right? The marketing name was .NET. But but it didn't really feel like .NET because you had to figure out, well, what's available here and what's available there. Like he just said, we made a lot of .NETs. Like, that's being really honest with you all, but it's fragmented. Like, it's fun to say that they're all .NET, but they're not really. But now that we have one group and they're all coming together, we have the ability to make some pretty significant changes.
And try to fix this. And so if you look at this slide's trying to say that we have three base class libraries today. We have the one in the .NET framework. We have one in .NET Core, which is slightly different, but it steals a lot of code from the one in the .NET framework. And we have Xamarin, which is mono, and Miguel's been stealing a lot of code from the .NET framework as well. So we kind of have a mush of this stuff today.
But you constantly bump into, oh, I need that property, and oh, where's that method? And then the next thing you know, it's Java.
Yeah, you write a UWP app and
write once, debug everywhere.
It's actually worse than Java because you write a UWP app and you try to access the file system, and it's like, oh, you there is no file system object.
Yeah, you can't do that.
And so this actually comes to play. We had this notion of something called PCLs, which stood for Portable Class Libraries. And this is if you actually wanted to write some code and share it across a couple of these models. If you wanted to write some WinForm or WPF code and share that with a mobile app or a Xamarin app, you might write a PCL today. But PCLs are kind of goofy, as the slide kind of shows, because when you write a PCL, you have to, at that moment, know of all the frameworks and all the models that might be out there and choose them at that time, which means if a model comes out after you build your PCL, like Xamarin or something, your PCL doesn't work with that thing.
Right.
Because you had to pre-choose what it wants to be compatible with.
And it was that pre-choosing of where your portable thing works which made it not portable.
Right. And then because the way the portable thing worked is we took the intersection of every single framework, the smallest piece where they all actually overlapped,
right,
that was the amount of .NET you were actually allowed to use.
So as long as it was in system, you'd be fine.
You'd be fine. If you want to use string, string is portable everywhere. And so, you know, we look at the challenges here, and, you know, key APIs are not present on all platforms. I was talking about File.io not being available in UWP. It is now. Different implementations on each of the platforms, and you need to know which ones you want to start with. And so as we start moving forward and we start thinking of .NET Core and .NET Framework and Xamarin, what we want to do is we want to have a new mechanism called the .NET Standard Library. And this is one BCL that covers all three platforms.
Right, because that was the strength of .NET. Like, I remember learning .NET 2002, 2003. You learn the BCL, and then you're writing WinForms apps or ASP.NET apps or console apps, and they worked everywhere. And you should have that same sense of power, and except then, now 15 years later, it should be,
exactly,
again, tiny devices, cloud devices, phones.
Since you started that Compact and Silverlight and blah, 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 all came out, and none of that works. And so we have this new notion of building what we call a standard library that encompasses all of these things.
Back to the BCL.
And so in the case of a standard library, your application will reference the standard library, which will have, so if we add new things to .NET, we're going to add them in the standard library. We're not going to add them in .NET Framework or .NET Core or Xamarin. We're going to write a NuGet package, and that package is going to be encompassed in the .NET standard, and everybody will have access to it.
Now, this inverts where the innovation comes from a little bit, right? This is all of a boxes and lines diagram, but if you think about how we innovated before, we had the compiler, we had the BCL, and then people were innovating, like, here's some magical stuff in ASP.NET, and here's some cool stuff you can do only on Android, and the innovation was at the top. But we were forgetting that we can do amazing stuff at the compiler, and everyone gets it. Right, we made Roslyn. Like, we did a brain transplant. One of the coolest things we did in the last several years is we brain transplanted the compiler, and no one noticed. Right,
right.
You know, while the patient was still alive, we popped the brain out and replaced it with a new, better brain, and we got 64-bit jitter, and we've got multi-threaded, you know, better server-side garbage collection, and we got new features for C#, and we're going to be doing that again. So we can flip the innovation and give it to everybody.
I want to be clear on one thing, though. The .NET standard is not going to re-implement all the BCL things, and so one of the things the slide points to is it still points to reference implementations. There'll be some things that are so common across all the frameworks that it'll just point to the existing implementations that exist in the existing...
But if you want to do, you know, system.file or whatever, it'll just work.
Everywhere. So once again, same APIs available on all the platforms. Master one library, as Scott was saying, just like the C++ or C library, you go find this thing, and you're good to do any C# or VB or F#, anywhere you want to go. One big surface area, not that small intersection of everything, so it'll be a much bigger.
So when you, right now, we find ourselves looking at tables, of is it available on this platform at this with this version? Do I just need to say, does this support the .NET Standard Library 1.0?
Yeah.
And if it does, it's supported.
We'll go change the docs, and the docs will say .NET Standard Library 1.5 or 1.6, something like that.
Cool.
So where this lands us is this lands us in this world that we saw before. And really what we want to do is, I don't want to say that I'm going to go ship a .NET framework every year and have to ship a .NET Core at the same time and a Xamarin at the same time. I want to say that future innovation of .NET is really going to happen in that bottom section of this diagram. So the .NET Standard Library will be where we'll grow a bunch of stuff. We'll have new compiler features, obviously, new language features, and the runtime components like the garbage collectors and jitters and stuff. No matter if you're on Xamarin, you're on .NET Core, and you're on .NET Framework, you get all of that stuff. And that's not going to change. That's really going to be where the innovation is going to happen.
So how future-y is this? Is this like 2 years away, or is this what we're doing right now?
The plan is to have this going by November. So, and I'm kind of making that date up. I'm assuming that we're going to ship the next version of Visual Studio in November.
You're assuming?
Okay. I'm assuming.
But you own it, though.
Last time I've checked, we've been shipping them in November for like a couple of years now, so.
But we couldn't give away the version number because, you know, who knows? It might not be plus one, it might be plus six. We could just pick a random number and add that to.
Well, it's technically Dev 15 for people that are not in the audience.
Yeah, that's really stupid.
Yeah.
The internal code name for the next version of Visual Studio is Dev 15.
Notice we're in 2016.
But it's the 15th version of Visual Studio, right? And the one that we shipped is Dev 14.
But we skipped
13. So Visual Studio 2015 is Dev 14.
Yes.
That's dumb.
Yeah.
Why don't we just call it what we call it? Yeah.
The next thing, obviously, is as you look at this thing, so as you were saying,
yeah.
The point is, this is we want to make this real this year. So now that Xamarin is part of the .NET
family, this
is
the whole point. Like, remember, one ASP.NET, we're expanding that concept.
So the idea would be, if you are a Xamarin developer in the room, you should be able to take your Xamarin code and move it over and share it with an ASP.NET Core application. You should be able to move it over and share it with a WPF or a WinForm application. That is the goal.
And the surface area should not be tiny.
It will be big.
Yeah.
So obviously the tooling will continue to innovate across all what we call the app models. That's the WPF, WinForm, ASP.NET, UWP, iOS, OSX, Android. We'll build awesome tools with Visual Studio Code to cross all those things. We'll have Xamarin Studio on a Mac as well that will let you do some of these as well.
And you've also got JetBrains doing Project Writer.
JetBrains. Now that we have an open source platform, cross-platform, mm-hmm. open source, we're now seeing third-party IDE start to show up, and I think you might talk about that in your keynote
sure.
later today.
Absolutely.
And then finally, you'll see us do app model work as well, but I really want to try to minimize the work that I do in that space. I don't want to have to ship a new .NET Core or a new .NET Framework or another Mono. I really want people to not have to go grab one of those things to get the new bits, which means if we start innovating in standard, you don't have to wait for somebody to have 4.6.2 or 4.6.3 or 4.6.4 on the machine. You can take advantage of whatever we add there immediately and not have to wait for some release.
Cool. So let's plug that into the concepts of ASP.NET, right? So right now we shipped 4.6 recently, and that sits on top of all the new Roslyn, all the new compilers, all the new framework libraries. And ASP.NET Core 1.0 sits on top of that, so you can run Core on the full framework. And we remember that they used to call this ASP.NET 5. And the problem with that was that 5 is bigger than 4.6, which implies that it's bigger, better, as complete, does everything 4.6 does, and more.
And but worse. It also gives this implication
that
5
it works.
Or that 5
we
replaces.
Call it 0.9, then.
Or 5 replaces 4.
Yeah.
And so that was the biggest thing. It's like we had customers coming to me and they're like, should I start my project with MVC 5 or should I move to MVC 6 immediately? Because I can't use 5 anymore because you're going to ship an ASP.NET 5.
Calling it ASP.NET 5 was a mistake. So ASP.NET, and core is really the word, right? Core is, you know, it's pared down to its core. So let's look at it this way. Watch the screen there. So this is the only confusing thing. Core, ASP.NET core, spans the full framework and the core framework. So what that means is you can run the next version of ASP.NET on the same .NET framework that you use today that runs on Windows. Works just fine. And if you want to do stuff like, you know, access the registry, which is a Windows-specific thing, or use system.drawing, which is a Windows-specific thing that calls into the Win32 GDI APIs, then you can totally do that. But if you wanted to run on Mac and Linux and Windows, then you're going to use .NET Core, which is a smaller .NET, and that uses the .NET Core libraries, soon to be the standard libraries.
Right.
The confusing part is this, that ASP.NET Core can target either one of those. So this is a really important thing for you all to think about when you think about planning. Okay? If you have a commitment right now to .NET Framework, you're using 4.5, using 4.6, you're a Windows shop, you're not really worried about Linux, you're not interested in using Linux or a Mac, then yeah, keep doing that. It's totally fine. Jeff Fritz on my team is thinking about what .NET, the next version of .NET Framework, 4.7 something, what web forms is going to have, new features, new cool stuff. If Roslyn and C# 7 include new features, web forms is going to get those features. There's still cool stuff happening on the full framework. And you can pick either ASP.NET 4.6, which just came out in November, or you can use .NET Core, which has a unified web API and MVC controller. You can use that on .NET Framework 4.6, and that's totally fine and totally cool.
And part of the reason we're doing that, part of the reason we made ASP.NET Core run against both Core and .NET Framework, mm-hmm. is because until that standard library vision actually exists, you're going to find .NET Core doesn't have all the same classes you might be used to
using. It is smaller.
It is smaller.
Yeah. One of the examples we give, and hopefully it won't always be an example, is let's say that you wanted to resize an image. Right? Like right now, .NET Core built in doesn't have that. Because how does system.drawing work today? Right? It calls into GDI. It calls into the graphics device stuff into Windows, which doesn't exist in those other things. So that means I need then portable JPEG decoders that run anywhere. So then I got to start looking at things like libgd and what library am I going to use? And we haven't invested in that yet. There are companies like Image Resizer, and there's a really great individual named, true story, Jim Bob Squarepants, who's doing an amazing job with some open source code that runs anywhere. But those are, right now, third-party examples, and hopefully we'll come, you know, the next version will come up with a way to solve that. But the point being that there are things that you can't do because we, as a team, and correct me if I'm wrong here, I want to make sure this is cool because I want to make a declarative statement, we're not going to make it so you can do stuff that's, you know, it only works on Windows. It's .NET Core, but it only works on Windows. You have to make it work on all three platforms or you don't get to do it.
Right.
That's important. So .NET Core stuff has to work everywhere. Okay? Now, these things are all released and fully supported and ready to go. And these things are all open source, not yet released, and soon we will try to have as many things released as possible and as many things as open source as possible across everything.
So we should talk about schedule.
Yeah.
Let's do that. While we're talking about this. Who in here has tried ASP.NET 5 or ASP.NET Core? Bunch
cool.
of folks.
Awesome.
So a lot of folks might recognize that we had a schedule that was up on our website up until I think about February.
And then suddenly it said TBD.
And then everything went to TBD. So part
what,
of that, that
what
merge,
happened, Scott Hunter? Who hurt you?
Part of that merge we talked about of the ASP.NET team merging with the .NET team is partially why this happens or happened. And what happened was the ASP.NET team had built a feature called DNX, which stood for .NET Execution Library. And this thing was built as a way to take .NET Core applications, make them run cross-platform, make them compile on other platforms, make it where you could ship the framework as part of the application. But there was a lot of web-centric things in there. So some because we were the web team, some of the things we did, the shortcuts we took, were leaning towards if you're building web applications. And as we merged into the .NET team, even before we merged into the .NET team, we were in the process of fixing this. The .NET team had came to us and said, hey, we really want to make these same concepts that you're building universal across .NET. So if I'm building console applications, shared class libraries that we compile natively, or web applications, I want all of those to have the same kind of model and not be fully web-centric. And so we took what was DNX and reimagined it as a generic way of building .NET applications, and we call that the .NET CLI today. And that merge was not nearly as trivial as we thought as engineers. So we started that at the end of November after we had shipped RC1. Mm-hmm. And we thought, oh, you know, by the end of January, we'll be ready to go. And I just got my first build on Saturday of the ASP.NET tooling, the .NET CLI, and ASP.NET that all work together since November of last year.
Now, as we get ready to switch over to this machine, I want to talk about the goal, though, okay? I've done a lot of hackathons. I've gone to lots of different things. Like, let's say that I sit down with, 50 high school girls and say, let's all learn .NET. Isn't this great? Yeah, let's learn .NET. All right, we're going to download this 2-gig ISO, and you're going to give me your... 3 reboots later, you know, it's 2 o'clock in the afternoon, we're coding .NET, woo! Right? That's not okay. So what are those kids learning?
Actually, did anybody in the room go to the ASP.NET training yesterday?
Did you come prepared with all the stuff you needed to install?
Who in the room that had to install stuff in the room, it took 2 hours to get the stuff installed in machines?
Yeah.
There, I see a couple hands.
So that's the competition. Think about the competition, right? What are those girls learning? They're going to go apt-get install on their Ubuntu machines or their Macs or homebrew, and they're going to say Ruby, Go, Node, Python, PHP. Well, maybe not PHP, but, you know, Ruby, Go, everything but .NET. And they're going to be up and running in 15 minutes. That's the goal. That is the goal. Apt-get install .NET. Download .NET. Go to the command line, type .NET new, and boom, you're running. Text editor of choice. Get a great experience anywhere. The goal is to run something like Visual Studio Code and have what we call a grow-up story. And the grow-up story can't be, you know, download this tiny editor and then now go and get this 2-gig ISO. So we're going to have a very smooth gradient that's going to take people from Hello World to Hello World on the web to enterprise drone that works in a cubicle farm. That's the nice smooth. You see how I did that?
That said, you should also, if you show up to his keynote later today, the Visual Studio team also recognizes that Visual Studio taking 2.5 hours to install.
Yeah, so I have a surprise for you.
He's got a surprise. We've recognized this is a problem that update twos and stuff like that should not take 45 minutes of your machine grinding. And so there's a lot of work being done in the setup in Visual Studio to let you get a small Visual Studio installed very quickly and just choose the parts of Visual Studio that you want.
Do you want to switch to this machine?
We can, yeah.
So what is this? This is number one.
Number one.
So I'm going to push the virtual button that says one. Who does that? Do I do that? Is there a button? There is no button. Could you push one person in the back? Is there anybody back there? Did they leave?
How do we switch to, like, video input one?
Is there anyone there?
Yeah, they are.
Hi. We're trying to get to the Mac.
My name is Douglas Crawford.
The Mackie. Here.
That's not us, dude.
That's okay. Is that it?
No.
No, it should be. It says displays right now. La, la, la. We're going to do this again later, too, so. Yeah, it's definitely the Mac.
The Mac screen did adjust, because it doesn't
it
know
adjust?
It knows it's an input.
Yeah, you want to look for this page here that looks like. She says it's not coming up.
Okay.
I'm gonna hit it.
You see, it does change.
Hang on. Okay, how about that? Nothing? Here, let's try this. This system runs Java, so it's having some trouble. This is very dramatic.
If not, we'll switch to the PC and do the same thing. Unbelievable.
Yay, thank you. All right, welcome. Oh, you're going to clap that? You guys have just clapped for the successful switching of a monitor. Do it again. Let's make them clap.
Well, it's the Java device. They really enjoy
the Java device.
The Java device.
Yeah, that's nice. All right, cool. So this is a Mac. Yay. All right, let's switch back.
So this... If you want to try our stuff today, there is .net.github.io today that you can go to, and this is where you can find the RC bits.
And in the future, it's going to be one place. We're going to go microsoft.com/net or something like that.
Yeah, we're working on that. By the time we RTM, we'll have that. And so you can try bits today. If you really want to do what I'm going to show, You might want to go someplace else, which I'm actually at github.com/.net/CLI. You can zoom that up if you
want. So just want to be clear that if you go right now to java.com, there is a happy clip art person and a big-ass button that says free download. And it's a different clip art person each time you hit refresh. So it's pretty exciting.
Because you all lay down on the floor and install Java.
I actually know her. So we're gonna hopefully have something like, hang on one second, something like.
/net.
I think it's /net.
It is, microsoft.com/net.
Yeah. We'll have something like this. This is kind of a prototype. And maybe even two buttons instead of three. And it'll basically be just like full framework or core. And that'll be it. And it'll walk you through an experience.
It'll actually be more, it'll be Xamarin as well, so.
Will he?
Yes, there will.
Okay. Boss says there'll be Xamarin as well. And it'll look something like this where it's like, hey, you know, what kind of machine do you got? And then you're pretty much off and running. Now, to be clear, it's going to be super easy, and then we're optimizing for numbers of clicks.
But if you want to play
that said,
in crazy land today, like we're going to
show.
Yeah,
crazy land. Here's
first,
a lot of
first
clicks.
Off, as Scott was saying before, if you want to try one of these, the download of this is about 20 megs.
Yeah.
So it's not the 2 gig download. If you download this, it cannot hurt your machine.
This is a really important point. This cannot screw up your machine,
to
be clear.
It just goes into a folder on disk. If you want, just nuke the folder and it's gone.
Yeah, and I'll talk a little bit more about this in the keynote later today, but .NET Core cannot screw up your machine. If you don't like it, you just delete the folder.
But github.com/.net/CLI, what that will take you to is that will take you to a place where you can grab the latest bits.
Mm-hmm.
And so in this case, I've got a Mac and I've got the latest bits. And the next thing I want to do is I want to be able to use VS Code on my Mac. And this works for Windows as well. I'm just happen to show it on a Mac. You can go to GitHub and search for OmniSharp. And OmniSharp is an open source project that provides all the IntelliSense for C# across VS Code, Sublime.
Can we provide a little context around that, if you
go
don't
for
mind?
It.
So when you type in an editor like Sublime, anyone any Sublime people here? No? A couple people? So when you type in Sublime, you type like something complicated, and then later on you go S-O, Sublime goes, hey, you typed that before, and then it goes something complicated, and then all it's doing is it's doing autocomplete, right? What it's doing is it's saying, oh, you typed that before, I can totally save you some time right now. Autocomplete is slightly different from IntelliSense. IntelliSense is like true introspection, where we are running the code in real time and inspecting the objects. So if you said var I equals Scott, where I is now a string, you go I dot, you expect stringy stuff. That IntelliSense has always been the secret sauce in Visual Studio. It's
yep.
effectively magic. Well, some cool people who aren't Microsoft, who are just open source people, went and made OmniSharp, which is an externalized IntelliSense and introspection engine. So imagine a separate process whose job it is to compile your code and have it running at all times, that has then made a web service effectively. So I can now send it some code and send it an autocomplete request, and it'll then send back what the list should be. So if you did that, then you could plug that into Sublime and Brackets and Vim and Emacs. So the Visual Studio Code team kind of hooked up with them, and they're working as a group now, both open source people and Microsoft people, and they made this here, which is an externalized Roslyn-based introspection engine, right? It's IntelliSense as a service that then is being used in Visual Studio Code. Visual Studio Code supports cool extensions. Right now, C# itself is an extension to Visual Studio Code. Right, because Visual Studio Code is written in TypeScript, right? So it's a JavaScript-based IDE, and it needs to work with everything. So if you want to get, if you open up a C# application in Visual Studio Code, it says, hey, looks like you're, it doesn't actually say Clippy or anything, but you know, hey, it looks like you're running a C# application. Do you want to get C# support? And then you say yes, and then it comes down. So that will be how it'll work. You'll download Visual Studio Code, you'll open your C# app, and it'll give you, it'll download the debugger as you're sitting there. Pretty cool.
So
but this is the daily build of that C# support. So you see here he's an OmniSharp VS Code. So you go and get VS Code, you go and get .NET.
Then you go to OmniSharp.
OmniSharp.
And you find the VS Code project. I'm gonna click releases. and that will bring up the pre-release version that I'm showing today.
Mm-hmm.
You see it's 4.15, it's a couple days old, and this is pretty cool. So what you do is you download this, and then you would come over and go into your code.
I'm going to tease you now. Get ready.
I'm going to tease myself. And the way you install this is basically I would come and zoom in there, sir.
You got to make it bigger. Maximize.
I would come over here and do file open and open that extension I just downloaded. So if I come over here and grab this V6 here and I click open.
You're really going to do it. This is like a live demo.
You'll see this little bar like moving down here at the bottom and it's installed.
Yeah, look, hang on. It says C# was successfully installed. Restart to enable it. It's a brave new world, kids. It's chaos.
Now notice what it says down at the bottom. I wish I could zoom in better on
you can zoom in on
the toolbar.
Do you have...
No, actually, I've zoomed. Keep zooming, doing that. That's enough.
Oh, yeah?
So now you see it. Actually, it just...
Successfully installed .NET Core debugger.
So once I installed the C# extension, it then knows to go find that there's a debugger out there, and it installs the debugger extension as well. And so now I have the ability to actually debug these applications.
So all that magic secret sauce inside of Visual Studio is now externalized and available. So theoretically, the .NET debugger could be plugged into Emacs if you felt like it. Like, I don't know why you want to do that, but you could totally do that. You'd never be able to close Emacs because you can't really close it now. But you get the idea.
But I'm in here.
IntelliSense works in Vim right now. IntelliSense works in all of these things, not just autocomplete. So he just put a breakpoint in Visual Studio code on a Mac. And did you run it?
It's running right now.
And you get watches, boom. So breakpoint on a Mac in Visual Studio.
Code. See my variables, see everything.
Now, Visual Studio code isn't Visual Studio. It's a code editor, not an IDE. So you don't want us to bring the kitchen sink all the way over. You're not going to see.
The C# extension was 5 megs.
Yeah.
So it was not 5 gigs, it was 5 megs.
Right. Everything's modular, everything's open source, you only install the pieces that you want.
And the point is, this is brand new stuff. If you guys want to go download this stuff, we made this available as about 4.15, so a couple days ago, mm-hmm. and it's worked for about 2 weeks, but it's for the first time that we have debugging
right.
in C# in VS Code on Windows and Mac and Linux.
Yep, works in Ubuntu. So who listens to the ASP.NET community stand-up? Are you familiar with this? If you go to live.asp.net. Every Tuesday, and to be totally honest with you, we're going to do one in about an hour. We're going to go back to our room and record one. It's our stand-up meeting, and we do take questions. We do it over Google Hangouts, and it's entirely archived. So if you go to live.asp.net, it's up there. Last week's, so the current one, is Damien showing us the daily builds. He had gotten it an hour beforehand. Now, here's the part that I think is a little bit overwhelming. A lot of you all may be exposed to these daily builds and these daily stand-ups, or weekly stand-ups, rather, for the first time. You might find it all very overwhelming. I want to point out many, many times that it's totally by choice. You don't have to worry about any of this, right? If you're an enterprise developer and you work at, you know, Aflac or Little Debbie Snack Cakes, and you're working on .NET 4.6, and you don't have any interest in doing daily builds of anything. It's just too raw. Just chill out. Wait until Christmas or whatever, and it'll come out, and you'll get it with Visual Studio, and it'll be awesome. It'll be baked. It'll work great. Okay? But if you want to play with us and see how the sausage gets made, then, you know, come on in. We've got weekly stand-ups. It's all open source. You can watch the commits on GitHub of the actual devs at Microsoft committing the code. David, there's no secret repository that we have where we're doing the real work. It's all happening live on GitHub. I want to make sure that that's really clear. What was that for? That was not nice punctuation for what I'm trying to do.
Or is it live.asp.net?
Live.asp.net. You're killing me, man.
It's real.
It is real, yeah. So the point is, I just want to juxtapose that, and I'll talk more about that in the keynote, but you get to decide how much you care about this. Now here, last thing I want to say, though, there is stress here, okay? Like he just said, you know, we haven't had a build since November. And I'm thinking, half of my brain is like, oh my God, we haven't been on a build since December. I'm like, it's only been like 4 months, you know? Like, it's big enterprise software. It's important, right? It's not that big of a deal, but it's stressing me out. If you are thinking about this stuff every day, you can be stressed out as well.
We were on a phone call with Scott on Friday, and he's like,
he was talking me down.
Where's a build? Where's a build?
Is that your impression of me?
Thank you. Before we switch over, I'll just show this too. This is actually a web application.
Yeah. So the point is, don't get stressed out. If this stuff bothers you, then, you know, wait. It'll come out. It'll be fine. But you can be as excited as you want. It's like a behind the scenes of the TV show. My wife never watches behind the scenes. She doesn't want it to ruin the magic. I want to know who's inside of Chewbacca.
You just ruined that for me, man.
There's a guy inside of Chewbacca.
Are you kidding?
Yeah, it's Ward Bell. Have you seen him?
Oh, my.
True story.
I don't know what to say now.
What are you doing? Oh, hey, look at that. So you're just showing that a web page?
I'm showing that not the debugger works if I go and click home.
I think we believe you by now. You just like going like that.
Stuff happens, man.
Yeah, it's actually working. And it's the same stuff. It's the same code, right? Like you could take this and put it in Git and give it to me now, and I could compile it too, right?
So let's switch to the PC and maybe talk a little bit about
how this stuff
works on disk.
Do what you gotta do, man. I got this new feature on my Surface Book here where you have to like, here, switch me back. Are you switching over there? It says like it recognizes you, right? You gotta like, and you have to like turn your head to prove that you're 3D. Because it could be like someone could have a picture of you and hold it in front of the thing. So the problem is that it's like, it's locked and it says, making sure it's you. Turn your head slightly to the left and the right. So I'm at Starbucks going. And then it doesn't work, and then it's like.
It looks really goofy when he does this.
Couldn't recognize you. It's really me, I promise. Okay, you plug it in again?
Yeah, I need to.
You're over there.
I know I am.
Window P.
I'm on the screen. Tell me which one to click. Where's duplicate?
Here, why don't you let me do that, sir? It's like working with my dad.
So let's talk about CLI. Because CLI is new. CLI is not something we've shipped yet, unless you go download those previews.
Okay.
Let's go look at what it looks like on disk. So in my program files, in the .NET folder.
Zoom in on that. No pressure.
No pressure at all.
So where does .NET live today? C, Windows. Microsoft.NET framework, blah, 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 blah. So you get it with Windows, right? In this case here, the shared framework lives in programfiles.NET.
And the way it finds, if I look in the shared folder, that's where the copy of .NET that I might have on my machine is sitting. So you see I have Microsoft.NET Core.app, the framework for building apps.
Now, on my machine, I have two of those folders because I have multiple builds of .NET, which is totally fine.
You can have a ton of folders inside of here with every version of .NET.
And if I understand correctly, if I had 5 or 6 versions here, and I want to uninstall one, I just delete it.
You just delete the folder.
I don't have to change anything in the registry.
There's no registry. There is no registry. This is just a file on disk. In fact, the way we even find this folder is when you run the .NET command, it looks to see where the command actually was run from, and it finds the shared folder underneath it, and then it falls in there. And an application by default will take the latest version of the framework that's sitting in it, the latest minor version of the framework that's sitting in here.
Right.
But inside your application, you can actually define what version of the framework you want to actually use.
Right. So you could pin your app to a specific version. And this is really important because let's just be real. If you've got, let's say that you're using .NET 4.5, and then, you know, and then she has got 4.6. She's like, super excited about 4.6. I'm going to install 4.6 now on this machine that IT supports. And he's like, no, I'm afraid of 4.6. You might want to use the new hotness, but it's going to break my app. So then you don't install 4.6, and then you talk about installing 4.6, and you do compatibility testing, and then the next thing you know, 4.7 is out, and you're afraid of that version, right?
Another thing, Scott, fun that's here is, how big is the .NET framework?
Is that this folder? 57 megs?
Yeah.
I think it's bigger than that.
That's it.
But if you do all the NuGet restores and stuff, it could be bigger, couldn't it?
That's not the framework.
Those NuGet restores are restoring app models and stuff for your application like ASP.NET, which is not part of the framework.
So the point here is that we can have multiple versions of the framework. They can all live side by side, and his system can't hurt hers. If he wants to stay on an old version of .NET while someone else is innovating with new stuff, totally fine, because some apps need stability, and some apps want to go and, you know, and kind of ride the train.
You can also go to our GitHub page and download the framework and copy it into any folder you want on the machine, set your path to that folder.
Right.
And now you're running out of a completely different folder on the
machine.
So
you have shared framework at the machine level, and then individual apps could be fully and completely self-contained. And then in the future, .NET Native would be self-contained and linked together so that it's not even identifiable as it's just an executable. It's foo.exe, and it just runs.
And back to timelines. The RC2 bits that I am running on my machine,
right,
we think will be available to you guys in about 3 to 4 weeks, is my guess.
Okay.
So probably 3 to 4 weeks, we have an RC2 build.
And is that when people should start, like, in earnest?
And that's when people should start in earnest. Okay. At that point, you're safe to actually go build applications and know that we're not going to break you because the tool chain and stuff is not going to change again.
Will there be a go-live license on RC2?
There'll be a go-live license on RC2, and then you can expect probably to RTM, I don't know, 4 to 6 weeks after we drop that release, probably.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, so if you're betting, you know, your company on stuff, and you've been wondering when should I make my decisions, in the next month or two, start thinking about RC2.
We think July is RTM.
You think so?
Yeah.
Cool.
So.
All right.
I'll switch back to you for a second.
I'm looking for where I was. All right, what do you want to do next?
You didn't do steak, though.
I'm going to do that in mine.
Okay.
We have 15 minutes.
We should talk. We could do a small app, and we could show Tech Empower.
Yeah, let's do that.
Let me bring up, while you talk for a second, I'll bring up some browsers.
I think benchmarks are important. One of the things that's interesting is that in the past, we haven't really gone out of our way to talk benchmarks. You know what I mean? We haven't talked about speed. And I think that that's personally kind of been a mistake. And if the assumption is that we're going to do things in the open, then we need to be really open about stuff, right? So we've gotten some pretty ridiculous results with perf, and a lot of that perf work has come from the community. If you saw anyone see the build keynote with the spaceship game called Age of Ascent? No one? Check that out. So Ben Adams, the CTO at that company, worked on Kestrel, which is the web server for .NET Core. And what's the numbers now? It was 1.15 million requests a second now, but we're upwards of 3 million now, aren't we?
It depends on the hardware. So there's a hardware lab in the ASP.NET team room, and there's a hardware lab that our perf and stress guys run.
Okay.
They made their perf hardware lab match the Tech Empower hardware.
Ah, I see.
While we have cheaper hardware in the ASP.NET room.
Because it's underneath Damien's desk.
Yeah, it's underneath Damien's desk, but it's still good stuff.
So what's our big number right now?
So our big number right now is we're doing on our...
Are you looking at it?
Yeah, I have it right here. We're doing 1.18.
1.18 million? I thought we had like a 2 million or 3 million.
We have 1.6 if we take Ben's latest requests.
On Ben's stuff?
On Ben's stuff.
Okay, so we're getting close to 2. Now, that's significant for a couple of reasons. First, it's the first time that we've really come out and said we can be fast. We've been very shy. We don't really want to... You know, we don't really want to fight, which is, you wouldn't think about that of Microsoft. But in the past, we haven't been really confrontational around perf.
Well,
but we also haven't been very impressive around perf either, because if you start scrolling down here, you start looking for something that you recognize.
Yeah, let's look for Node.js, for example. Let's look.
The long tail is long.
Where's Node? I thought Node was the fastest web framework.
I see Rack. That's Rack by itself. There's
there
Dart. There's Node. So 300,000. Requests a second. Now, this is a plain text benchmark. Now, I think we all need to recognize that benchmarks are crap. But there's different levels of benchmarks, right? This is effectively a hello world benchmark. That would be a benchmark. Another one would be, returning JSON. Another one would be returning JSON from a database. Another one would be returning a web page that's run through a view engine that comes from data from a database.
And by the way, this benchmark does cover those things as well. If you look at the top across
right.
the top, it has fortunes and single query and multiple queries.
I just want to make sure people understand that there's varying levels of benchmarks, and you don't get to take a minivan off road and then talk about how the Sienna is a crappy vehicle because it doesn't do off roading very well, right?
So on this list, we actually right now would plumb in right underneath Netty. So we are number 8 in the list.
Okay.
So we are the eighth fastest web framework today.
Well, wait a second. You said it was 1.8 million. Are we doing
No, I said
million?
On our perf lab that runs this exact same hardware.
Oh, I see.
They're running 3.3.
So we don't know on their hardware where we would show up.
So what will happen is as soon as we RTM, we've already worked with these guys, we will show up live in the benchmark with everybody else.
Okay.
But I want people that are building ASP.NET to know that you're in the top 10 fastest web frameworks on the planet, even with the RC bits that we are shipping today.
Right. There's a stupid amount of performance work that's being done. And one of the fundamental things about ASP.NET Core that is new is the level of modularity. Right? Remember I said I always talk about motorcycles versus minivans. ASP.NET Core is and can be both because it's going to be completely modular. If you go file a new project and you say I want an empty page, you don't even get an error page. Like the yellow screen of death, that's a separate thing you have to add because every single component is something that can slow you down, right? In ASP.NET today, the size in memory in the heap of a request is something like 23 or 26K because you know you've got HTTP request dot this and that. Like all that stuff that we take for granted, like ASP, you know, request dot headers, well, you had to parse the headers and you had to make a list of name value pairs and then parse them into the list of name value pairs. And that's a managed object that sits on the heap, et cetera, et cetera. Everything is weight.
Here's
well, if you make
app.
All of those things optional, then things start getting really, really fast.
Here's your app, and
people are seeing perf numbers that are 6 times faster just by moving over to Core, because you have to be very specific about what you want.
This is fun to talk about a little bit.
Okay.
Let me bounce this up.
Here's where he's plugging in this stuff.
This is even before I even plug in this stuff. This is notice that this is a web app.
Yeah, I want to talk about this.
But it's got a main.
Yeah, this is cool.
Because it's this. People might not know this, but in ASP.NET Core, web apps are console applications.
Isn't that cool? Think about that for a second, right? Because what's the entry point of an EXE, right? Public static void main, right? That extern main is that thing. But in the past, it's been a DLL, right? And how do you decide? Well, somebody has to then pick that DLL up and jump into it, so then there's an executable outside that then decides, I'm going to go and run that. So historically, you got to think about how IIS fired up and what IIS's responsibilities were.
Well, even worse, it was
as
magic.
It relates to ASP.NET. Well, I know how it works.
Somehow, your code got
but
running.
But to some people, you drop the web app into IIS, and then a miracle happens, and then it shows up.
One of our goals in ASP.NET Core was to actually get rid of all magic, and that's why you see a main here. It's like, the app starts just like a regular console application.
So could you just run that from the command line?
Yes.
Yeah. Let me make sure that that's clear. Now, Kestrel is the web server, and it's more of a web application server because I want to make sure we're clear about the responsibilities of IIS versus Kestrel. IIS isn't dead.
But let's be clear. When we're done here with the core bits, we can produce an EXE.
Yeah.
And you run the EXE.
I think we get that.
Okay.
I know. I'm pretty excited about it. I can see you are. But I want to point out, right, as he's setting this up, the difference between Kestrel and IIS, right? IIS, in the past, we thought generated pages, right? But it didn't. It brokered the HTTP request to ASP.NET, which then generated the pages. And then static files were served by IIS, right? The like CSS files and JPEGs and stuff. And then the pages were then brokered off to, you know, IIS underscore or ASP.NET, whatever the worker process was for ASP.NET. I've forgotten.
WP underscore something.
So in this case, Kestrel is going to be listening on a port, and then we kind of reverse proxy that stuff. So you've got the request coming in from IIS, then Kestrel is going to be a separate executable that is listening. So then IIS provides the life cycle, right? If Kestrel goes away, it's the thing that brings it back. It's the thing that can have multiple of Kestrels.
It watches your memory reboot you. It watches the attacks going against you and potentially reboot you.
Right.
It'll actually clean up URLs to make sure dangerous URLs don't even get to the web server. But it allows us as a team to have one web server that runs on all the platforms.
Right. And it means that you also, by the way, in fact, the web platform handler is really cool. You can run, you know, Rails on IIS now. You can run anything you want. We took the pieces that we had in Azure that allowed Azure to run Node on IIS, and we brought that back down to regular IIS. So the web platform handler lets you run any executable now under IIS. So if you happen to have an executable at your company that maybe listens on a port, you can front that with IIS now and have IIS manage the life cycle of that. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, to your point here, this is...
So you just made a regular old web application that doesn't do anything, and it throws an exception. And here, that's Edge saying HTTP 500. That's that error page came from Edge. He threw an error. There was no yellow screen of death. There's no IIS. There was no one to give anything other than a 500 error. So now he's going to go in here, and he could do this just in NuGet, but he's doing it by text. He's adding ASP.NET core.diagnostics. And again, he just as easily could have right-clicked and said, manage NuGet packet.
But it also shows how many few dependencies my application has. It's
well,
got
right
Kestrel,
now you just have Kestrel and
IIS integration, and diagnostics.
So did you? So here you brought in diagnostics, but you have to say, I really care. I want an error page, right? And you're actually saying developer exception page as opposed to.
So
if
you're running an MVC application, what we'll do is if you're running it in debug mode, mm-hmm. we'll actually light up the developer error page. If not, we'll just force it to a controller on a path.
Does that mean that it's the end of seeing developer error pages in production on Microsoft.com?
I would love to say so, but anybody that writes that line of code in their application
and releases
will do this.
It. So here, you're getting the light blue screen of death. Or the cyan screen of death. But it's also got useful stuff that developers want. Now, here's the part that's significant. That's just a piece of middleware. If you want to write your own error page, then knock yourself out. You could have animated GIFs. You know, who knows? Whatever makes you happy. Before, it was magic. I've been doing .NET and ASP.NET for 14 years. I don't know where the yellow screen of death is. It's in there somewhere, right? It's in system.web. It's a miracle, right? I have no idea how it works. I doubt anyone here does either, and I doubt even he knows. So that level of magic, we're trying to get rid of. There's a lot of times in .NET over the years, as things grow and become mature, where you find yourselves flipping a light switch, and you see a light turn on, and you go, oh, that switch must be connected to that light. But that's an assumption you can't always make. We're trying to make it so everything is clear, everything is open, and if you ever have a question, there'll be not only good documentation, but literally everything is pluggable, everything is open source. There are no hidden hooks that you can't also plug into. That's really important.
So I put an index.html in the debug boot folder.
Okay, so you see what he did here? I just want to point this out. He's got a static HTML file sitting in www root. We've changed it, of course, so the root of the web page from a static perspective is not the root of your app. Right? You don't necessarily always want the things in the root of your app to be served. It's in www root. So then he should go and hit localhost/index.html, and it's not doing anything. It's still saying hello world, which is on line 26 right there, because he never said it was okay to serve static files. When we're talking about how everything is optional, everything is modular, we are really serious. He has to explicitly not only say that he wants a piece of static files, but turn that on. Does that make sense? That's how you make it both fast and the ASP.NET that you're used to. Now, remember I said before how it's early and things are changing and some people are finding it very kind of freaky. If you find this stressful, wait 6 months, it'll come out. You'll go file new project. You'll pick ASP.NET. It'll look like an MVC app. It'll act like an MVC app. You don't have to look at any of these text files. You don't ever have to go to the command line. You can right-click to your heart's content on Solution Explorer, and everything will be just fine. You know, all the concepts are compatible. Here you go. You'll get a dialog. It'll be just as before. Those things are happening. But when you want to look underneath and see what's going on, we want to make sure that everything is available.
We might want to call this out, actually. This is something that's
what
different.
Doing? So
file new, I have the RC2 bits on my machine.
This is really early and not the actual dialog box.
And so notice that we actually did change things a little bit here. There's actually three entries here now.
Right, because core
ASP.NET web application is I want to build a 4.6 web application. ASP.NET core web application is I want to build an ASP.NET core application. We're not going to blend these two things together. They're two separate things.
Should get rid of this thing.
We will at some point.
That's kind of weird. Yeah, cool. And
there's core web application on .NET framework as well. These are
all standalone things, and you'll get a one ASP.NET experience for each of those.
Right.
But we don't try to merge all those concepts together.
You don't have those mock-ups that Syed sent, did you?
I do in my laptop bag. You want to see them?
Yeah, do you mind?
Yeah, just...
I mean, maybe that's a weird thing to ask. But so the person, Syed, who owns the new dialog box, sent out a couple, maybe a week ago, interactive click-throughs as a PDF. We want to be really transparent with you all, right? So he's going to go and get an email from this individual that says, here's what the new dialog box is going to look like. So we figured that'd be, I just thought it'd be cool to show you that. So make that so, sir.
We should say something. This talk has been different than a regular ASP.NET talk on purpose. There's a lot of ASP.NET sessions here this week with lots of detailed training stuff.
And go and attend those sessions. But
we're
trying to
come and talk
context.
About things you would not hear, we hope, at most of those sessions.
Right.
So
we'll give you the context, and they'll give you the deep training. And when all this stuff gets released, we're going to go and have Microsoft Virtual Academies. There's going to be some great books being written, you know, towards the end of the year. Again, if it stresses you, don't worry about it. You can jump back in later. Okay, so is this the click-throughs that he did? Okay, so these are click-throughs in that this is not real. He's drawn
These were done on March 10th.
Of March 10th? So these are actually not the latest ones. I've seen newer ones last week.
There are slightly newer ones.
So file new project. That's a little bit old. Here you go. That's kind of cool. So here's an example. This is one way. We've got a couple different examples of how this could potentially look. This is one mock-up.
This is the way it will actually look?
This is the one we decided on? We did the one on the sides. Yeah, the one was vertical.
But the tabs are, I think, the important part here.
Right, so you pick each one of these things here, right? Then you've got... Oops, let's do another one.
Zoomed in too much.
Yeah, here's another one. There's core. See, and core templates has less stuff. Then this is really important. If you select certain things, it'll say this project may only run on Windows, right? Because we're going to warn you. If you're trying to be portable, we want to make sure that you know that. You can click on authentication.
And for the first time ever, we've actually now let you, for databases, you can choose databases like SQLite, MySQL, Postgres, SQL Server, Azure.
Yep.
You'll be able to actually select cross-platform databases if you want.
Yep. Here we've got doing a cloud login, so doing an authentication against Active Directory. Here's SQLite showing up in a database dropdown, which is pretty sweet. Here's your alternative ones. This is the one I thought we were doing.
It is. Well, we are.
This is the left side.
We're doing this with the tabs, not these tabs.
Okay.
So it's a mix, hybrid of this.
See what he's doing here, you guys? We're showing different treatments about how this dialog box should potentially look. This one's gray. I don't know why that's interesting. I like the... So it's going to be more like this, but you like these tabs
It'll
here?
Be with these tabs and then the stuff down the left side.
Cool. So that's the level of transparency that we're trying to offer you all. And again, if you want to get involved, go up to the GitHub and take a look at the dailies. Again, they won't hurt your machine. Until you are asked to install tooling, which would be like Visual Studio tooling, there's no chance of anything destabilizing, anything that you're working on. If you are doing like real work every day on Visual Studio proper, one way to be able to play with this stuff on your corporate machines would be to use Visual Studio Code, plus these daily builds. You can have all sorts of fun, and you never have to worry about loading anything in particular into Visual Studio itself. Cool? So I hope that was somewhat useful. Maybe you could switch back over to this other slide thing.
I put the thing back on you. But
no, she's got to switch back over. Could you switch over to, I don't know. That was my ending slide. There we go. Cool. Right. So I hope that provides some useful context. I know it might seem a little bit random, but literally he got those, I got the build yesterday, and I literally installed it on the plane for RC2. We are actively working on making this a good thing for you all. We got debugging working a couple weeks ago, and Damien showed it to us on the community stand-up. And then we're going to do a community stand-up in about...
An hour.
An hour. What are we going to show during that?
The bits.
We're going to show this stuff here that
RC2
you just showed?
Bits.
Show the RC2 bits and the tooling.
And we'll talk about schedule, tooling.
Cool. So I got to go figure out if we can use hotel Wi-Fi to host a Google Hangout. Cool. Thank you all very much.
Thank you.